listening to the radio program about Hacker Spaces.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Hacktivism Hour of May 5th, 2011. Liberation Day in the Netherlands here. In the studio we have Jaramiel, and the underappreciated GMC is doing the sound part. And for those watching on the webcam, the weirdo with the beard on the sofa, that's Oki. But first some music. DAG, Destruction Horaire Global.
Oh geez, you should have told me.
I said I would be starting with some music.
No, you. What song is this?
The DAG, Destruction Horaire Global by Jubilmix.
Destruction? What?
It's my French is horrible. I know that. Destruction Horaire Global.
Let's listen to it.
C'est Émilie de Breteuil ce mardi matin. Des banderoles sur la façade et des slogans pour dénoncer la dotation horaire annoncée la semaine dernière par l'inspection académique. La dotation horaire, c'est le nombre d'heures allouées pour l'année scolaire à venir.
Suppression d'options.
Suppression d'options.
Suppression d'options.
Heures supplémentaires.
Bref,
supplémentaires.
Bref,
supplémentaires.
Bref,
supplémentaires.
Suppression d'options.
Heures supplémentaires.
Bref,
suppression d'options.
Heures supplémentaires.
Bref,
suppression d'options.
Heures supplémentaires.
Bref, heures
supplémentaires.
Okay, welcome back. You just listened to the song DAG, Destruction Horaire Global, which according to our French translator, GMC, means the destruction of the global timescale, whatever that may be.
Timetable.
Timetable, yes.
Walter, is the last time you speak in French in this show?
I'm afraid it won't be the last time. I will try, but horribly mutilate the otherwise inferior French language. anyway.
Okay, that cost us a couple of listeners.
yes. who are French, so don't count. we heartily welcome listeners from all nationalities.
We like both kinds of music, country and Western.
That remark is solely Jaramil's. And since we are not quite serious, the first important piece of news is that Chat Roulette will implement a penis detection algorithm in their system a while ago. Is mentioning they're exploring new options for penis detection. Apparently, the number of penises on Chat Roulette still hasn't been cut down to the level acceptable to Chat Roulette. But now on a slightly more serious note, because this is fairly amusing, there's lots of news which is slightly less than amusing. For example, in the Council of Europe, there has been a proposal, or at least some people are proposing, a virtual Schengen border, which already has been christened the Great Firewall of Europe. And the idea is to stop illicit content, whatever that may be, at the borders of the European Union. And I'm sure the Chinese can provide a bit of expertise in this field.
Well, let's hope they do, because it's all leaking anyway.
Of course, it's I do agree. It's a fundamentally useless thing to try.
Yeah.
But there will be.
I mean, all these things, they make me really laugh. We have like years of history in copy protection of games. And the best minds paid by the biggest capitals to actually protect those games, and they are still cracked nowadays. I mean, how can you pretend now you just come up and say, like, okay, I just stop something from happening on the net?
There's also a bit of good news, and that is that the German law on mandatory internet filtering against child pornography will be scrapped. That's the plan right now, so I think that's a plus in my book. But people are looking at me like I'm some advocate of child pornography in the studio, which I'm not.
No.
But by the way, the people who are watching, there are quite a few peeping toms on webcam 2.refspace.nl. The fellow with the dreads, that's GMC. The fellow with the afro, that's Jaramil. I'm the guy in the suit, and the guy with the hoodie, the sunglasses, and the poorly kept beard, that's Oki. So we have, this is a rather diverse group in the studio. We're lacking women, though.
Yeah,
Jaramil, it's a failure on your part.
I can be a little bit.
To get back to the news is apparently someone made a copyright complaint about a public domain music library, and it got taken down. And this again proves that no, it doesn't take down, does not necessarily work in practice. Because their domain name got seized even by the complaining group, which is the UK's Music Publisher Association. It's kind of a RIAA, but then the UK version.
Talking about the UK, what's up with those Facebook profiles and the deletion?
Which Facebook profile? The Pippa Middleton Arts Appreciation Society? Or yes, there is a Facebook page for the Pippa Middleton Arts Appreciation Society.
Okay. Now, I heard there's a lot of political
It doesn't mean that all England is stupid, Walter.
I wouldn't dare to suggest. I'm a bit of an Anglophile, actually.
Yeah, good.
GMC.
Well, I think it was something you sent me. There's been like a couple of hundred or
yeah,
like
there have been lots of Facebook profiles being taken down in the UK. In fact, there's a tie to the Pippa Middleton Arts Appreciation Society. It was all about the royal marriage, which I almost successfully managed to ignore. But as part of that, there was lots of activity on Facebook, people protesting the royal family, the austerity program of the current government, which is a bit of a contrast with the lavish festivals connected to the royal wedding, etc. And
well, as far as I know, the Facebook groups that were taken down were called Uncut, and they were like purely protests against the public funding cuts in the
the austerity program.
That's what you call austerity program. Yeah.
That's the English term.
Well, austerity is a big thing, you know, and actually the best I can recall in of austerity in politics is this myth that was pretty much high before the Second World War started of Kali Yuga, you know, was part of the exoterism of Nazi when they picked up from the Hindu. And Kali Yuga is this demon that is supposed to bring to Earth a kind of austerity period to sanitize it from things that are happening. And that was
Where you're going here, Jeremy.
I'm going to the point that I think we are all lucky and we should refuse austerity because we are so lucky and we should be so lucky. And if some people failed, is not exactly our time to be sad about it. They just should leave the place to the people that can do better.
You quite lost me here. First of all, we are very lucky because we are the 1/5 of the world population. We have was 4/5 of the world's wealth.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, there might be a reason to be more austere, to have more sharing. And on top of that, most governments are spending much more money than they are getting. And
yeah, but this austerity on the same time is going to the closure, the enclosure of national borders or at least cultural borders. So you're right. Yeah, we should share more. But still, we are mining for minerals in Africa. And after us, China is doing. So there is no change there. And in the meantime, we are just whipping ourselves in here. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me. We are lucky here, and we should be so lucky.
Given that we changed colonialism in kind of a more colonialism at a distance, we just should just expand raping other nations and not to be austere for ourselves. But I think we're getting massively distracted here.
We are raping other nations since forever.
Yeah, so and they would rape us if given the chance. So
one thing, I mean, we as Europe, you know, like Europe around my neck, actually. And that's what is happening to the outside nations since they are colonized by us. And that didn't change during periods of austerity. And it's not going to change now, even if we have an austerity in here. So the public funds are different from the discussion of an austerity that is projected to the outside because we are not going to make the outside better by having austerity in here.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, regardless whether you're first or a third world nation, you cannot spend structurally more than you have. But we are getting massively distracted. The point was there were Facebook pages protesting the austerity program and they were taken down immediately by Facebook, which kind of proved that you can't rely on Facebook as a walled garden because they will roll over to the first government that comes along. I'm much more in favor of a much more fragmented internet. But that's just my opinion, and I should be reporting in a impartial and journalistic way.
I think it's interesting to have also a little bit of interaction as long as we have these discussions. I'm sure tonight is going to be interesting because I love the interaction with you, Walter. You have a very liberist point of view, which I can relate to. And I brought with me a book for it, you know, just like to pick up quotes. It's Michel Foucault, The Birth of Biopolitics. And we have channels that are listening already. I announced this on Bitcoin Dev, Bitcoin Politics, and Witcoin.
And we also have Hackerspace Signal on irc.freenode.net.
Yeah, and it's all on Freenode. And what we are reading, because I'm trying to gather on the Bitcoin people, which are a very interesting bunch of really crafty developers. Let's cut it to that now.
Yeah, and we'll get back to Bitcoin later on this hour.
Bitcoin-Politics. It's a fine channel that has been created since a little while. And I'll close the intervention just mentioning that tomorrow on Forbes is coming out the printed interview to Gavin Anderson, the current maintainer of Bitcoin. So it's going to be a huge media wave. That doesn't mean you have to buy bitcoins right now, but, well, they triplicated their value in the last 2 weeks. But okay, well, that's not about it.
Jaromir, we'll get back to Bitcoin later on. We're doing the news.
You know, but I have all these people on the chat.
Can I derail this sure. news?
Even further, yes.
I mean, because you've we're talking about this whole Facebook thing, which is evil. But I mean, there's some other stuff. I mean, you've been also involved with Loria, right? I don't know how to...
No, I was really involved with Indymedia.
Okay.
And Loria, I know the people. I really appreciate their development, and I'm using
it
a bit.
What is Loria?
It's a project. It's basically they are trying to set some protocols, make some agreements on how to share data of a social network, how to connect disparate. They call it pods. It's federated social networking, basically. You can set up your own.
But Diaspora was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Well, Loria existed before the Kickstarter buzz of Diaspora, actually. And it's developed mainly in Spain and Spanish-speaking countries. And it's based on ELGG, ELG.
Yeah.
I know ELG. It's a nice tool, by the way.
So the difference, I think, I've been hanging out on both of these, like the Diaspora and Loria. Loria is using existing protocols and software, whereas Diaspora is just building a whole new thing.
Well, Diaspora is Ruby and Loria is PHP and Python.
All those dynamic languages is get off my lawn. To get back
people is listening, they care. Like languages are like continents.
I'm just trolling, and I'm going to troll you even further because I have some news from Italy. Your home country.
Oh. My home country is Netherlands. I'm sorry for you, man.
I'm flabbergasted here. An Italian court ordered all Italian ISPs to block the BitTorrent search website BT Junkie.
Holy shit.
And BT Junkie IP addresses and its domain name were to be made inaccessible by all Italian ISPs.
Well, they did that with Pirate Bay already 2 months ago, so it's not reachable. But if you put the Google DNS or OpenDNS, if you put DNSs, different DNSs, then you reach it. And if you use Tor, you reach it and stuff like that. But they did it, yeah. The fact is that the trackers are not actually running from the IPs of these websites, so as soon as you get the torrent, you're off on yourself. And DHT is working also quite well. So that's not a big issue. And I would like to give also good news. There is this add-on for Firefox, which is called Mafia Fire Redirector 0.4 Beta by Mafia Links. Not that I like Mafia. Actually, I hate it. It's a really horrible social
You're more
dynamic.
A Gamora type of guy, given that you're from Naples.
I could do this in Napolitan, but
you know what?
I'll save you from that and just say Viva Maradona. But
I was going through my invoices and putting them in the computer. And what I noticed was that actually, if I wanted to look for my mobile phone provider, T-Mobile, what I typed in was mob. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe that means something.
Mob.
The mob. You know, the mafia.
Yeah, but that's American thing.
Let me finish this Mafia Fire news. There is a website. It's a blog of someone involved pretty heavily with Mozilla because it's an insider news. The blog is lockshot.wordpress.com. And today reports Homeland Security requests to take down Mafia Fire add-on. From time to time, we receive government requests for information, usually market information and occasionally, subpoenas. Recently, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security contacted Mozilla and requested that we remove the Mafia Fire add-on. The ICE Homeland Security Investigations Unit alleged that the add-on circumvented a seizure order DHS had obtained against a number of domain names. MediaFire, like several other similar add-ons already available through AMO, redirects the user from one domain name to another similar to a mail forwarding service. In this case, MafiaFire redirects traffic from seized domains to other domains. Here, the seized domains names allegedly were supposed to stream content protected by copyrights of professional sports franchised by other media concerns. So they answered to these subpoenas with three questions. Have any courts determined that the media fire at dawn is unlawful or illegal in any way? If so, on what basis? Please provide any relevant rulings. Is Mozilla legally obligated to disable the add-ons, or is this request based on other reasons? If other reasons, can you please specify? Can you please provide a copy of the relevant cessation order upon which you requested to Mozilla to take down the media fire add-ons is based? So basically, they responded with three very short legalese kind of questions. It comes out that the people didn't have any court order, and maybe they are going to work on that. And this is probably the first case in which we have even a request to take off an add-on for Mozilla that actually
No, it's not the first
you.
Time. You had the pirates of the Amazon.
And the Greece.
I was involved in that. Oh, shit, I forgot.
Yeah, you're getting old, Yaramil.
Pirates of the Amazon. But that's pretty a Dutch thing. Huh? It was known also outside a little bit. Yeah, we made headlines on the New York Times.
It was an add-on to Mozilla, which allowed you in browsing Amazon.com to pull the proper torrent file from the Pirate Bay.
I should attribute it to the people, the real geniuses that did that. And they are two students coming out from the Pizzwarte Academy in Rotterdam. And one of them is deeply involved in the FAT lab, which is one of the coolest thing that appeared on the net in the last 5 years. I'm going to be good with you guys. Timo is also doing well. He's pretty bright.
It's time for some music, I think. Space Invaders by Sputnik Booster. Welcome back. You just listened in this order to the song Space Invaders by Sputnik Booster from his album Robot Science. And the song after that was by Betty Cox, and it's called Remember. It's a DJ Kono remix, and it's from his album The Signal. Anyway, the big subject of this night's episode of Hacktivism Hour is Bitcoin. And Jaromil, Bitcoin, what is it about? How does it work? Explain.
One of the many people that could be here explaining, I'm taking my little attempt at it. It's a cryptocurrency. I guess most of the listeners tuned in know about it, so let's keep it short. It's a peer-to-peer system to have transactions, so you don't need a bank. It doesn't make banks obsolete, I would say it makes banks optional, which is rightfully so. You can have your wallet of actual cash in numbers into your hard disk. Up to you if you can keep it safe or not. That's one of the next issues.
So it's digital money in the sense of a piece of information which represents value.
Which can be authenticated, yeah.
Yeah, that's the next question, of course. How can I prevent someone from copying money?
And actually,
it will be called counterfeit.
Yeah, and actually, well, yeah, to create value, you need authentication. And actually, that role, I mean, since we left gold as a reserve, that role of actual natural, let's say, regulation has been lost. So Bitcoin is actually bringing it back. It's not infinite. There are 21 million bitcoins to be mined and then it's over, but there are also eight ciphers after the comma, so you have a lot of space to maneuver for inflation.
But you mentioned mining of bitcoins, and there's apparently it's a finite resource. And how come it's a finite resource?
Because of the algorithm.
And what's the algorithm about?
You mine this money out of cryptographic operations, and these cryptographic operations have asymptotical end to maximum.
Okay, and what kind of cryptographical operations are those then?
I'm not sure we can talk about it in a radio show in human language. There is a lot of binary stuff going on. But I'm mostly interested in discussing right now.
I read a little bit about it, and yeah. My understanding was that you get random pieces of data, and you're supposed to brute force you get hashes, and you're supposed to brute force the piece of data which can be the represented through the cryptographic hash.
I'm not sure brute forcing is a good term. Hashes is, and the random data, the origin is the Genesis block. And actually, I find it very interesting because in the original Genesis block and also in the new ones coming up in the new currencies, for instance, the branch that Sakarson published on GitHub recently, the same Genesis block is changed, is configurable, but is still using the title of a newspaper with the date of coming out. And I find this very interesting because it's actually is the way to mark a place in time, is that you have a newspaper coming out at that time and you mention the headline of that newspaper. I find this very smart from the current Bitcoin developers. Anyway, what I would like to mention that is very interesting in Bitcoin, rather than discussing the pure cryptographic issues which you can track back into the code, is what is the sense of this? What is the sense of internet born of a new currency that is challenging the right to have a sovereign by the people of the internet? Because that's what we are questioning here. If you have a sovereign, then you can do coinage, you create money, and that used to be a concept in a lot of previous philosophy and studies on the art of governing.
The idea of minting money or coining money is younger than the idea of sovereign entities. And deeply into the Middle Ages, even into the Renaissance, within all the separate kingdoms of Europe and princedoms and whatever doms we had, the cities tended to have their own right to mint their own money. Yet different currencies in the city of Amsterdam, opposed to that of Utrecht, as close together as they are. So I'm just challenging your anarchist side here. It's not entirely new concept. It's not intrinsically connected to the idea of a sovereign nation that you can that the state should be in a position to make money, to mint money.
No, it's part of a process of constituency. If you constitute yourself as an entity capable of dealing with other sovereigns, then you start doing your money, and then you're an exchange market. And that's where Bitcoin is placing itself. But now, the analysis that we can do is pretty, I mean, it's tricky. We can say, okay, this is the people of the internet. That is actually, and I would be interested in exploring that option, although I'm not sure that is really happening, that the people of the internet is saying, okay, we are here and we start having a sovereign and we start making money in the way we know, and they are very advanced because the internet had no obstacles to innovation and to progress, basically. In the last 20 years, 30 years, 40 years had some puny attempts at obstacling the advancement of new technologies, but basically we always overcome them. I mean, it was in the introduction of this show how you cannot actually at the end block domains, but you just can try. And
I'm a bit pessimistic about the inability, since you're kind of heading for a perfect storm. Of
just because you use an Apple computer. Don't worry.
No, that's not the reason, Jeremy. That's my optimist side, the Apple computer.
What I wanted to quote tonight, and I brought this book really for you because I really appreciate...
You know how good, how my command of the Italian language is and how deeply fond I am of reading philosophy in Italian, yes.
Yeah, I will live translate this. Okay. Through.
Please do so.
Book in Italian and written by a French, so... the book is this Michel Foucault, The Birth of Biopolitics... And I find it very interesting. And the most interesting is the quote that he does of this debate, which is called the Lippmann debate. It's the Walter Lippmann, whom you can look up in Wikipedia, was one of the major sustainers of liberalism in the US back in the 40s and even before. And he hosted this dialogue that had the best minds of liberalism. Röpke Rüstow from the Deutsche Ordo Liberalism, Hayek von Mises, you know, and they said there stuff that influenced back to Friedman, you know, in the Chicago School, and actually marked the way our society and the art of government is shaped. So this debate was hosted by a person that never appeared very much in this debate. The person is Louis Rougier. He was an epistemologist from France. And he is pretty humble in this whole thing because he just hosts it. But he has also this big charisma that made him able to be the intermediary, the bemiddelaar, as you say in Dutch, between Pétain and Churchill in the summer of 1940. And Rougier introduces this debate, after that introduction doesn't say as much, with this. Bear with me, I will be a bit slow, but I'm live translating. The liberal regime is not only the result of a spontaneous natural order, as it was declared in the 18th century. The various authors of the codes of nature, but it's also the result of a legal order that presumes an lawful intervention of the state. The economical life, in fact, is unfolding in a scenario that fixes the regime of property, of contracts, of patents, and of failures. the statute of associations, whether they are professional or commercial, and the money and the bank. So this is a law scenario, is settled by law, and they are not data of nature. Sorry, I made a little bit of parenthesis here. These are all things that are not data given by nature. As the laws of the economic balance, but they are contingent creations by the lawmakers. Therefore, there is no reason to suppose that the legal institutions that existed until today have a definitive and permanent shape that can satisfy all the needs of liberty of transactions for all times. So he's saying that basically that there is no natural order, and that we are fixing, I mean, that the juridical system is fixing a game, the rules of the game, and these rules, we should not take them as good forever, but they have to adapt.
Well, you have said nothing which I would disagree with.
He goes on. Okay. Yeah, that's why I bring this on, because we can disagree on many things, Walter, but this is my cadeauce for you.
Thank you very much.
The question of the legal scheme that is more apt, more agile, and more effective, the most just as possible for the market, has been overlooked by classical economists and would deserve to be object of something like a Central of International Studies for the Renewment of Liberalism, for the renewal. That is a quote from Rouget. To be liberal doesn't mean in any way to be conservator, to be, how do you say?
Conservative.
Conservative. In the sense to maintain the privileges that come, by fact, from the previous legislation. It means, to the contrary, to be essentially progressist, in the sense of a continuous adaptment of the legal order to the scientific discoveries, to the progress of the organization and technique and economy, to the mutations of the social structures, and to the needs of contemporary consciousness.
Yeah, but we're getting into a debate of social sciences versus law and all that, and I'd love to be there. But what's the connection with Bitcoin?
Man, this guy mentioned it, then in the lawful legislation that governs at this time, of course, at any time, one of the main roles has been to actually the money, you know, to celebrate, to release money.
Making money, in the sense of minting money, is something which is something done by the state merely for the fact, especially since we had something called fiat money, money not necessarily backed by its own value like gold coins. I mean, the Chinese had paper money in the 15th century or something like that. As soon as you get into something different but the precious metals in your coins and you get into paper money, and even right now most money in the world is just digital money anyway. It's just numbers in banking systems. It boils down to the amount of trust people have in their money.
Yeah.
And the state has been considered to be the more trustworthy party in society since, let's say, the 18th century. No matter how you look at the state, you're an anarchist, so you don't like the state at all.
Well, I'm born in Italy, man.
Yeah, okay, I can see where you're coming from.
Come on, give me a break. Yeah.
Yeah, if you were Swedish, you might be different in
that respect. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we are in Europe now, no?
Yeah. It's still a mistake to have some countries in the European Union, though. But that's an entirely different subject again. The point being is...
Well, I still like it to be here, you know? We have good beer over here.
It's we're drinking Belgian beer, by the way. Now, the point being is that money is in fact very much a subject of trust, and if you can arrange something different to maintain that level of trust, who cares if the state is needed or not? I'm much more interested in the practical part. For example,
trust creates the state, and liturgy just amplifies that.
Given enough trust, you don't need a state. Like I said, I'm much more interested in the practical implications. You have a finite resource, the Bitcoin hashes, which means that at the end of the day, there will never be inflation in an economy done by Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's not designed as a deflationary.
It's a deflationary designed currency, which makes me wonder, because a certain amount of inflation is in fact needed in a progressive society which is actually progressing. For the mere fact that money, at the end of the day, is a reflection of the perceived value, cumulative value of labor in the economic area which is using that currency.
Yeah. Ultimately, if it's fair enough, yeah, it should.
Yeah, it fluctuates, and it's all perception, it's all psychology. But the value of, for, let's say, the euro is, at the end of the day, derived from the perceived potential labor produced by the European Union. So if that value of a single piece of money, of a future piece of labor, in a society that is progressing, the same amount of money will require less labor in the future. And that's where inflation, in fact, is partly coming from. Because to get to the same amount of money, you will need less labor in the future if you're in a actually progressing society which has a higher productivity in the future. So if you design a currency to be deflationary, you're kind of expecting that there will be less labor available or less productive labor available in the future. And a currency that is deflating is either a sign of a society which has a high mortality rate, or a growing mortality rate, or a society which is actually degressing, technologically speaking. So, and even that's not a very practical question, that's a very theoretical question. But is Bitcoin just not designed for failure to begin with, because it's a deflationary currency?
Mm-hmm. That's a good argument, and I think I can hardly reply to that, because I am really, you know, in my own, I mean, I'm following Foucault in this biopolitical trip, which is building a genealogy, as he calls it, which is basically building a narrative that has been neglected so far. And you're talking in a very informed way, a language that I don't know, which is the language, the pure language of economical analysis, which goes beyond political economy even. But you are starting from a political economy ground. At least I can understand you, because I can talk a little bit that language. It's all about languages, you see. And then what I'm really excited, I mean, I can just tell you what I'm really excited about in Bitcoin are many things. One thing that I think of is in this world panorama of actually matching labor, of fine-tuning games, of fine-tuning systems, as they called it in the Lippmann dialogues even before the 68 May, what is interesting is that the system gives out the daemon code. What made very successful email back then, when SMTP protocol came out, is that people could install a daemon that would work on their own server. And this we don't have so much, you know. That's why we have disasters like Facebook right now. That's why we need the diaspora and Lorea and all this stuff. And that's why we need. And that's why when Genjix showed me OpenID, I think it's a cool idea. When he points me out, I'm like all like, oh, OpenID, what is this Web 2.0, another gizmo thing? I have to log in. And he says, no, man, hey, you can host it on your own server. That's cool. So what I'm really excited about it is that wherever we go, we have opened up the potential constituency for communities to say, look, this is our value, this is our labor, and this is what we produce with it. This is the transaction, the movement, the value, and let's confront it to your exchange. As opposite to operations like the one that is being conducted right now as we speak by IMF, the International Monetary Fund, or the World Bank, who are completely going for the world, for the worldwide money. They love this idea. They are secretly loving this idea, I tell you, of a worldwide money, so they can simplify their bureaucratic work of just administering a world that doesn't work. And Bitcoin is bringing this variety option in it. I can fork the Bitcoin project anytime soon, and no one is denying this. It's there as open source, and I can trust it a lot. I trust the current maintainers. I have no reason to fork it because the current maintainers of Bitcoin are pretty stiff. But there is a reason for it, you know, like you can actually understand. And they're doing quite good. The thing is working.
Well, so that gets me to a much
so
more
that is what I really admire in it. It's like the fact that it's a spore, it's open, you can mount.
Oh, it's a very cool idea. I completely agree on that. I only have a few doubts. One of them is very theoretically, very economical, and we're probably boring our listeners. Another one is much more practical. I was looking at sites that accept Bitcoins, and they are. There's sites that exchange euros to Bitcoins, dollars to Bitcoins, and vice versa. And there are actually web shops that accept, including web shops hiding behind I2P gateways, which sell you magic mushrooms, LSD, and marijuana.
Every new technology you have, every new forum you put up online, you will have lots of hits from this stuff. Look, Facebook is censored, yes.
I'm in favor of legalizing all drugs, by the way. Yeah. So that's not my point. My point is, apparently we're attracting, and that's in the true spirit of the Roman god Mercurius, who was the god of both trade and thieves, all kind of shady figures of the less than formal economy. And won't this attract attention from certain authorities who would love to crack down on this and would consider this a attempt to overthrow the authority?
What do you mean by overflow?
Overthrow.
Overthrow.
Revolution. USA, anarcho-syndicalists should like that concept.
Yeah.
I'm a liberal. I don't like revolutions.
Well, it depends. I mean, the whole thing, I mean, it's definitions. And how do we progress from where we are? We are being whipped all over by the IMF bureaucrats that come over and bring austerity, you know, and says you're bankrupt. But how can you tell a country like Greece you're bankrupt? Have you been in Greece?
No, I haven't been.
Man, it's gorgeous. You should go there. It's like incredible. It's like they have all this old stuff standing still on, and they have a lot of sun and islands and good food.
And your point being?
How can they be bankrupt?
Because they have borrowed more money than they can ever pay back. And they're not paying taxes whatsoever, and they still expect the state to provide all sorts of service at the level of a welfare state.
Yeah. Then go
you
and analyze.
You can't spend more than you have continuously.
Analyze the sociopathic hierarchy, the top of the pyramid on top of that corruption that led there, and you get these like 100 guys that you cannot get rid of because they are just like too connected.
I'm going to say something awful here, Jaramil, especially for you as an Italian.
Yeah.
But in the long run, every country gets the leadership it deserves. You got Berlusconi, the Greece got the Papandreou family, we got Balkenende. Well, okay, replaced by Rutte, but it's not that much of an improvement.
No,
if you're saying that...
You're very faithful in the voting systems, then.
I do believe in the self-cleansing abilities of democracy to the extent that there are enough people in a country which do believe that you should have clean hands to the extent you can have clean hands as a politician. I don't believe in politicians with fully clean hands. But there is a massive difference in attitude. For example, I know this fellow I know is a Colonel Hacker who moved from Flanders to Finland. And in Flanders, dodging taxes, and I mean not entirely cheating on your tax, but just dodging taxes, there's a kind of gray area in between, is a national pastime. And by the way, in the Netherlands, people like to circumvent tax code as well. It's pretty normal. In Finland, it's not done. You're supposed to pay taxes and everybody pays taxes. It's just frowned upon by everyone. It's not something... If you're in here in the Netherlands and tell your friends at the pub, I've managed this way to get this deduction from my tax for bill, it saves me this amount of money, you're a cool guy. In Finland, it's uncool to do so. The state is us, we're the state, and we pay happy. This is a solidarity issue, etc.
Yeah, but you get a lot of services. Come on, if you're not uniting in such an adverse situation, you are weaker. I mean, you need to have a way to create a community, but then the community, the boundaries of this community are not checked by the power of a media of convincing. I mean, in Italy, we have a big bozo that bought all the media. Actually, he didn't bought it. He got it from Craxi, like a socialist party.
Well,
that is a dirty story.
You're talking
anyway.
About is a small fellow who likes to screw with 70-year-old girls, don't you?
No. It's a bigger story. Yeah. And actually, what you have at the end is like a media bozo that takes over everything and says, I'm cooler and I can give you jobs. And ultimately, this is the representation of the fight between the private and the public. That is the best interpretation I can give you of what is happening in Italy.
No, it's a misinterpretation of the idea that the public has infinitely deep pockets and always can devaluate its way out of having borrowed too much.
It's forever going war. It's the private against the public. And in the middle, it's the commons. And no one notices. No one notices. I mean, what you call in economy externality is a common. And there is no legal perspective for it in between a war that is clamping them in. Because on one side you have this guy that he is like the entrepreneur and he is the one that creates jobs and is busy and actually is, you know, like he's creating stuff that happens. On the other side, he's completely corrupted and whatever, and he has crimes and all that. On the other side, you have like all these judges, you know, that are really in crisis right now in Italy, you know, and they try to get him, and then they, you know, it's a war. It's war. They are together at war.
Oh, yes, I'm definitely not jealous about...
What brings this war to the whole country is extreme failure, because everyone is concentrated on... How big is the sexual appetite of this guy for young girls? And on the other side, how communist are the judges to interpret the law as it was written? And what do you have out of this is people living a system. And they are constantly bombarded by this war. Media is very important because you create reality through its representation.
I'm very politically incorrect. If you live in a country which allows the media to be concentrated in that way, there's also a sort of expectation about leadership, expectation about to what extent you can grab into the public resources for private means, etc. It's partly a cultural idea, and you already hit it
as, and that's indeed a northern versus southern European issue, and that's the reason why the Germans are so offended by the idea that they may have to pay for the Greeks. The idea that at the end of the day, the state has to balance its books as much as a private person has, and that somehow is not
fair enough. Then you care about your own community, but then give the communities the tools to do that. And that's what it is, Bitcoin, because money is part of this legal framework, of this is the liturgy of creating a glory for having a state, is the constituency that you release.
Bitcoin is never going to solve this issue.
No.
A state,
but it's
or
code
a person
that works. It's code that runs. Okay? It's a little bit. But I see it as a very constituent generation of code online that can actually create the binding necessary for communities to regulate themselves around their values. And at any time, if you have the people from the commons, the people from a little town that is fighting for their clear water, for not having nuclear energy, or for whatever they believe in Italy, if you give them the power to have their own value and play it on the market as players, then we are probably out of a crisis, of a stall, because the stall is actually this unification into issues that are that have on top
I see
of
an
both.
Entirely different role for cryptographic money, but we'll get back to that after the music.
Cool.
We are going to listen to Hypnosis from the album 1984, and the song is called A Tot Gas, and I hope yes.
Gas, gas, I don't gas.
some more music. Okay. Well, by the way, Jaramil is just taking a leak now, and I'll just explain a bit my statement about marijuana and Bitcoin. The point I was making was that as soon as you have something which is probably going to be slightly controversial to begin with, and then it gets used for something which is probably illegal, you give the authorities a pretext to crack down on it. And so much for this explanation to the people on IRC, which, by the way, we love getting feedback. And I think I should throw in some more music until Jaramil's back.
Meanwhile, I'm a bit annoyed. I can't get this bit thing client to run on my my shiny Linux laptop, and the pages only talk about Windows and Mac. What's going on here?
Well, Mac just works. Okay, throw in something, a Zen dub by King Dubby. Can you do that, CMC?
Sure.
Jaramil is back in the studio. We couldn't do it without him, of course.
Nah, I'm drinking beers on your account, man. Like, come on.
Bastard.
Yeah, well. It's nice to be here. Actually, Rev Space is an awesome place, man. Like, it's... How long you're here?
Slightly over a year.
Yeah.
And we got our 42nd member.
42nd? Oh,
yes.
That's about the time to start the spaceship, then.
The number of wholeness. The answer to the universe and everything. 42.
Cool. No, it looks very good.
Shut up.
I see numbers.
Anyway.
I see numbers floating around the room all of a sudden.
Contrary to what as it seems to be, contrary to what looks like, Jaramil has not been smoking marijuana, despite all the dubstep we've been playing and all that. But Jaramil, there was some activity on the IRC channel. People were making additional remarks.
There are a lot of bad remarks about you. I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay. Give me some examples.
I should really mention... No, I changed the channel already. I changed the channel. No. Forget it. I'm going to read the good remark. But the bad remarks, I'm going to tell you later. But actually, I think you should not underestimate Walter, because he's a good sparring partner. And nowadays, it's very hard to find sparring partners. you need to have one in order to have fun. Because otherwise, and he's trying and he's being the lawyer, the advocate of evil, of the devil. Very often he likes it.
I've been called a corporate prick, I suppose.
Yeah, also he plays that and all that. And
I think corporate whore.
Yeah, it's a good. It's
pays
a,
good money.
I'm an ontological whore. I mean, but
it pays the money for your beer.
It does ontologically doesn't, but anyway, it's about having something going on. So that's what he's trying to do. He's the host of a radio show, so it agitates it. And I think the best quote is from Toppy on the channel. He says, like, at least he prefixed it so that I can read, because there is a lot going on. We are on the Bitcoin Politics channel. And you can join and follow up later. What's significant about Greece, he says, is that how can a country that has able and knowledgeable workers go bankrupt? Meaning that they cannot pay the debts. That's what it means, no matter how years of time it will take. So that's quite crazy in itself to think about, that you have like workers and you have a country, and in a projection of time, you cannot just get over your debt. But okay, there wasn't a lot of feedback that I could follow. Please prefix it, in case that I get it highlighted. But what I wanted to introduce to you, because I know you're very knowledgeable, I mean, I know you from the Free Culture Forum. That's where we meet. And it's very interesting forum. It's, you can look it up online. It's fcforum.net. And it's developing recommendations for policymakers, for those that are developing the low scenario, for those that engage this institutional sparring game of laying down a scenario where we can actually have a societal game that works and we are all happy and we should be all lucky. So, in there, I see that you're very knowledgeable about content production. And I wanted to submit you this project that you don't yet know. It's called Witcoin.
How do you spell that?
W-I-T. Like wit.
Okay, as in wittiness.
Yeah, as in wittiness. Yes, exactly. Witcoin.com.
Up in the meantime.
So,
do carry on, please.
One thing that is really interesting about Witcoin.com, which is a beta, as everything we are, I like to quote. I like to quote a great poet that I love, Diane de Prima, who wrote once: "We are Elizabethan. We are unfinished." And that's what we are. We are beta forever. But anyway, that's just poetical. Witcoin is a content syndication platform that is tightly bound to cryptocurrency. So you can actually change Bitcoins to Witcoins, which is one-to-one exchange. Up to now, they maintain their promise. It's one-to-one. And you are a stakeholder in a system where you can vote up and down, vote up mostly stuff and tag it and submit it. So it's like Slashdot, which
it's a bit like Flutter for hippies.
Flutter for hippies?
Yes.
No, Flutter is more hippie than Witcoin, I think.
Okay.
It's still more hippie than Witcoin, especially being Swedish. Flutter is very hippie. You know, it's still like it has to compared to Witcoin. Now, I see a basic problem. I mean, I see Witcoin moving forward from Slashdot. I provocatively will state that might be bought into Slashdot one day, because it's just like a system that puts your value. The way you gather your values in quantities and spend them over voting up content that you're interested in, and you're really a stakeholder of that content. And it's a model, ultimately, it's a model to support content producers. So I think that Bitcoin right now is the best and the most interesting application of a cryptocurrency online that appeared independently. Because it aims at creating a system where content producers are supported for the quality. And most of the people in there, they care that in time, quality gets good. Now, when I stepped in today and I asked you about the music, you mentioned that when I asked for reggae, you said, yeah, cool, because the dubstep in the Creative Commons, you play only Creative Commons in
play Creative Commons music.
Yeah. And the quality of the dubstep is getting better and better. Now,
what I said was the average quality of dubstep on, and I mostly look music up on Jamendo.com, which is another interesting Web 2.0.
Jamendo is, yeah.
It's also a corporate thing, but it's an interesting model.
Yeah, it's cool.
The first time I made a show like this was called Hacking at Random, and I called it Sturgeon's Law, and 99% of everything is crap. And indeed, that law applies to Creative Commons music as well. There's loads and loads of really crappy Creative Commons music. But in certain genres, dubstep being one of them, the amount of crappiness is significantly lower than in other genres. And there's really lots of good dubstep. And GMC's explanation for that is that it's reasonably easy to produce good-sounding dubstep in your bedroom with just a computer and a mixing panel.
Production means
in the
possession of the populace.
Yes, and probably a proper bong. it might be helpful for this specific type of music. I think that's it's much harder to make a classical symphony Creative Commons, I think. I mean, getting a properly schooled bunch of classical musicians together, it's much more difficult to do it for free or for fun or whatever.
Yeah. Well, what was my point is that you care about the quality of the content and you feel that the quality of the content is an issue. Everyone, we feel. When
it comes to music, I don't think that Creative Commons music is inherently worse than other music. Jamendo is more or less taking over the role of the intermediary between the producer and the consumer in a pretty laid back and interesting way. But people are forgetting, and I've been shouting all the time that the record industry is something from the past and intermediaries are something from the past. And in fact, I was wrong in that respect. Mm-hmm. We are forgetting that the records companies are not only gatekeepers, mm-hmm. But are also curators.
Mm-hmm.
The record companies themselves do not understand that they are also curators.
Mm-hmm.
They frame everything in the role of gatekeepers, and now they're treating the ISPs as gatekeepers and want them to filter infringing material and mm-hmm. take their responsibility and all that jazz. At the end of the day, in a world, and I think we're not living in a post-scarcity world, but when it comes to music, to books, to the stuff you nowadays, with the digital tools, you can produce in your own bedroom,
mm-hmm.
power to the people, basically. We're getting in a post-scarcity world for those mm-hmm. services or whatever you call it, goods and all that. But even in a post-scarcity world, you still need to pick out quality. And time is always a relatively scarce resource, and you don't have the time to wade through loads and loads of crappy dance music or poorly done death metal bands. By the way, there's loads of death metal in the Creative Commons, and mostly from Poland and Russia, and not all of them is crap, by the way, but there is a lot of crap in that genre too.
Death metal is a big thing, man. I went to Indonesia.
Indonesian death metal. Never heard of it, but it sounds like a fascinating
thing. You tribes, man, they really do the real thing. You know, they have the chicken slaughtered on the stage and all this kind of stuff. Like, whoa, man! Like, they're really wild. It's really a really big thing. Oh, punk, death metal, grind metal. Hardcore.
I'm not surprised. Ever since I had this classmate who was in a gospel death metal band, I'm not surprised at anything anymore.
It's all sissy stuff in Europe. Yeah, it's like
anyway, the point was, and we're derailing the discussion again and again, is that you still need curators in some way. Some of them have to be paid, some of them aren't. And for some kind of cultural production, regardless of what the currency will be, Bitcoin, dollars, pesos, you probably still need funding other than from amateurs or from tip jars.
I don't like this word amateurs because it's misused nowadays.
That's
we are all
for an
amateurs.
Entirely different hour. Yes, we're all amateurs.
I come from an artist background, at least professionally, and I tell you that art and profession is a really scary field. And amateur word is used...
A bunch of disgusting snobs, basically.
Yes.
But,
and the amateur word is used to say, like, the peasants, uneducated peasants trying to be. So
watching Rai Uno.
I mean, we should claim back the meaning of amateur, which, back to your favorite language, means someone that loves...
Isn't it rooted in Latin? But
we can skip French for Latin.
Yeah. And anyway, I don't think when it comes to content creation that cryptocurrencies are the solution, but they may be a part of the solution because indeed there are still lots of barriers. Within Europe, I can easily transfer money from bank to bank, but if I want to give money to a Argentinian rock band, I'd like to. Then I'm in deep doo-doo because that will be difficult unless I use PayPal, which is rather evil, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I quite like the idea of cryptocurrency.
I mean,
like
PayPal
to have
works,
a crypto-
but gets a big taxation for their insecurity.
Oh, no, but they're also completely evil. Look at what they did to WikiLeaks.
Yeah. Even before to a lot of other initiatives. I have an experience with the Iraqi Linux user group, whom I was in contact with. They got a lot of donations back in 2004.
The what Linux user group?
Iraqi Linux user group. They were based in Baghdad at the time the war started against Saddam. They got a lot of donations. They were a bunch of really crafty, cool people. They were trying to do, like, you know, supporting local bloggers and, like, doing radio, and we did some radio. You can look it up. The whole history is on our website, streamtime.org. And they got a PayPal account, and all of a sudden it was closed, stolen, and they got lots of money over there. And, you know, I mean, history is not done with if and but, and but yet, if I imagine if they would have kept that money, that bunch of people would have done something much looking good by now, being very useful to everyone to actually reactivate that land. And they didn't got it. And they all went different ways, and that's a pity. So the intervention of PayPal in that case...
There's several more cases. I'm just generally very wary of monopolies on anything, whether they're state monopolies or large corporations. And I'm very fond of the idea of peer-to-peer everything. In that sense, I like cryptocurrencies. But I, like I earlier said, I wonder whether the people behind Bitcoin have thought this all completely through by choosing something which is inherently deflationary currency. I'm not saying that you should have an inherently inflationary currency. Maybe you should have something which is neutral, which can be inflated or deflated. But then you end up with the question, and that's a very important political question, who has the power to deflate? Which gets us back to the discussion about Greece and Italy. And I think it's time to throw in some music and let us also assess how long we will continue with this bloody show.
viendra pas à la privatisation. C'est clair, simple et net. Il n'y aura pas de privatisation d'EDF et Gaz de France. C'est clair, c'est simple et c'est net.
Entreprise de privatisation de tous les services.
Welcome back. We just decided to go on until 12 or something, unless the mob in the Bitcoin politics IRC channel will show with pitchforks and fire and stuff like that. Anyway, getting back to
By the way, what for the people tuning in for Room IOI, there will not be a Room IOI.
Yes. Apologies for not having such a splendid voice like Astera and having lovely subjects like her. We've been talking about Bitcoin and haven't been derailed all the time in the meantime. The short version is Google Bitcoin, look it up. It's a cool cryptocurrency. And I'm still wondering, is it just an experiment or is it going to be here to stay, Jaramil?
I think it's here to stay. At least the code, and the maintainers are doing a great deal in actually making it serious. So I love the reactions we have on the Bitcoin politics channel, where some people join. It's like, okay, I'm the baked guy, yeah, and you are the host, and there is one thing that I like to quote right now is just perfect. Even R, He's around in this world scene and is quite an interesting guy to read up, because I'm following him on some channels actually. And he just shouted up, Bitcoin is people. So I think that's a really good statement. Bitcoin
so
is
the
people.
Bitcoin client, which is happily grinding away at home, mining hashes and hasn't found anything so far.
Let me tell it on this channel. Like, it's just like people listening, they are all knowledgeable. I'm not going to pop the bubble right now by saying Bitcoin mining is gone. The heroes are there. We all remember them. By the way, Diablo, I think your miner is the first, but okay, he is humble. He says he's the second. There are people that have done incredible stuff with mining in the last year and a half. But mining right now is not the thing. The best thing you can do if you want bitcoins right now...
is to sell a liver?
Kidney? Come on.
Okay.
It's not. It's you just offer what you do in your life. You offer it also for bitcoins. And you start looking around yourself for people that will accept it for what they do in their life. So once some of us coders back in the 95, 96, you know, like the first times in which you was in forums and stuff, you know, like people coding... I also used to have...
I was on IRC in 1992.
Yeah, IRC is the best and first thing that happened in the internet. Anyway, we had this tagline like, we'll code for food. Serious. Man, like, I don't care what's in between. At the end, like, just give me, like, my free life in a place where I can be myself. And that's what I'm doing. I'm coding. And I need food, because everyone needs food. And ultimately, I wrap up, I promise, is food is the most important thing. And if Bitcoin reaches to bind to food, then really Bitcoin is people, because people is food. Sorry for being an atheist here, but that's what it is. And you need to have that stuff... and you need to have it good.
Okay.
And so locally produced and related to the community that eats it and produces it, and it needs to be good. And my final thing for the Bitcoin people that are listening here, you're very important. What you're doing is really good. Eat good food. We need you.
Okay. How feasible is it that we ever end up in a situation that we can use cryptocurrencies to pay for groceries?
The best opportunity we have is to actually tap into the AMAP kind of network.
AMAP, what's that?
AMAP is French, I'm sorry.
I can't pronounce French. We have noticed that
it's
before.
It's locally produced kind of farmer stuff,
but then becomes a very political thing.
They bypass supermarkets, so you get into the hippie kind of transition town. You know, transition town. It's big. You can look it up. Transitiontown.org. There is a lot to learn. They have very interesting design patterns, and you can hook up to some farmers there, and you order the weekly or monthly thing, and makes it very easy for them to plan, because they know how many customers they have, and they can deliver you seasonal food which is produced locally, and it doesn't employ a lot of oil to bring it to your house, because we are living in insane worlds in which we can buy stuff.
But let me give you like, some you know, unasked advice.
Yeah,
if you're promoting a cryptocurrency, and again, I like it, don't sell it in a way that ties you to a lifestyle which may not be appealing to everyone. What you just described is an interesting development, probably a good development for mankind as a whole. Let me assure you, there are lots of egoistic assholes like me around who love driving. Well, and that's not true. I don't drive an SUV, but just imagine that the average guy who just wants to get his money for petrol in his tank for his car and get back and forth to his job and go on a vacation every once in a while and is not necessarily all that connected to the grand scheme of things, at least in a psychological sense, and make it appealing to that. And if the killer application, and that gets me back to the marijuana remark, is for Bitcoin is being able to sell marijuana over the internet and not being tracked and traced, or it being used by politically shady groups. And I know one man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist. It ends up to be in the atmosphere of money laundering and circumventing the massive monitoring that's going on financial transactions. I mean, every bank transaction between multiple banks in Europe is just passed on to the Americans, just in case you're a terrorist. If you end up in that peace of mind space, it will never become a success.
Well, my answer to that is, you remember, let's look at history. One of the older technologies that we had in digital realm is VHS. I'm going back quite to some...
That's an analog medium.
No. Look, you can store digital information film.
That's true.
And that's the same technology that floppy disks were based. So the film, magnetic. So actually, technically, VHS tapes are still used in that technology, and they can store a lot because you have a head and you have magnetic stripes. So VHS was one of the earliest digital technology on Earth, and we had a problem with VHS too. It was pedophilia.
Oh, think about the children. No, and I don't remember any VHS wars about pedophile content. But
if you could smuggle marijuana on VHS, it would have happened.
Oh, I'm not saying that you shouldn't do it.
I'm not saying VHS is bad, because I can buy a VHS. I can rent.
No, but one of the reasons
after that, I could rent into my neighborhood a VHS tape with Mad Max on it, and that blew my mind, man. Like,
precisely.
I need
Mad Max. You're making my point, Jaramil. The point is, VHS had separate applications. Some of them were unambiguously okay with the masses.
Yeah.
And actually, a friend of mine, her theory is that most people bought a video camera not for vacation videos, but to make other home videos and watch themselves back later on. And I think she may have a point there, which, by the way, is an entirely legitimate application as long as it involves consenting adults. But the fact that VHS had so many other applications which were clearly legal, fine, perfect, wonderful, and all that. I mean, that was the Sony Betamax case. At the end of the day, this technology had more applications than the infringement of copyright, and therefore the U.S. Supreme Court said Betamax can be brought to the market. If Bitcoin is something which is only or mostly accepted by those who do stuff which are at the very least very much out of mainstream or even transgressing rules which are generally accepted, then that was my point.
I think by understanding the types, and I'm just thinking of a bunch of very inspirational types here, I think the Bitcoin developers are just heroes, and they should be remembered then as that. They are pioneers. And it's not about whether that can solve the world problem or not. As you're mentioning, I mean, you can have like the Sony Betamax coming up and then being better because it solves the problem of pedophilia. But, well, I think these heroes, they don't even want to get busy with the losers that are fearing about pedophilia going on the next technology, because pedophilia exists since the beginning of humankind. And I'm not saying it's good for itself, but I'm just saying you're busy with the wrong thing, because if you're blaming the technology
for human nature... No, I'm saying if the technology is hardly applied outside controversial circles, and I completely agree that there are very bright minds involved in Bitcoin, and these people do not necessarily have a responsibility in how their technology is being applied.
They are so intelligent that they will just like send everyone like, you know, bonkers by just saying, yeah, okay. I mean, the people that I know involved in that, they will say, yeah, I am a pedophilian. Hell yeah, now what?
This discussion is getting bollocks. The point being is, whether it's pedophilia, drugs, or whatever, I don't care. It is it going to be used by something which is universally or almost universally acceptable? This is wonderful, this is great, I want to use it. Is there a killer application outside online marijuana stores for it? Yes or no? And you said yourself, your benchmark success will be buying groceries. I'm not sure whether you ever will get there, but I would love you to get there. There must be some intermediate killer applications or uses for it, I hope. And on that note,
There is one post that is pretty funny. It was posted on the IRC channel. Is a link, bitmunchies.com. It's selling munchies for bitcoins, so you can.
Well, you got your groceries. Maybe it's time for some music. And I do agree with the guy on IRC saying Bitcoin and pedophilia. Yeah.
I am not sure you're going to be healthy after it, but hell yeah, hackers were never healthy.
It's wonderful. Before the music, I want to say I agree with the guy on IRC saying Bitcoin and pedophilia. What a discussion! Indeed, it's a completely ridiculous subject altogether. Let's have some music.
love 8-bit, man.
Thank you.
I love it.
You sound baked indeed. The song you just listened to was Au Hoiti Toiti Arvi. It is by Mini Rock from his album Miniland. And I think Mini Rock is from Germany. It's quite an extensive 8-bit scene in Germany. And first of all, I'd like to thank Lai Spooner on the Bitcoin Politics channel, because he much more eloquently put the point I was trying to make across. Indeed, and I'm just quoting Lai Spooner, if there's no interest outside of the black market for Bitcoins, then Bitcoins will fail. There must be widespread acceptance or perception of future acceptance to thrive on the black market. And well, to thrive in general, I would say, but that was Lai Spooner's remark. And that wasn't exactly the point I was trying to get across, and we got in a way too heated and loud discussion on pedophilia and all that nonsense. Jaram is complaining about my English now, I see on IRC. That's wonderful, Jaram. You're sitting in the studio and then I'm complaining about my English on IRC.
And drinking your beer.
And drinking my beer.
I just say I cannot understand. I love Dutch accent on English. It's so funny.
Okay. Which kind of reminds me, I wanted to make a jingle before this program, but never got around the time, and to abuse It's-a-me, Mario, from Nintendo, and then make it It's-a-me, Jarabiddle. Well, never got around to it. We may do that another time when we have you in the studio.
Well, you can be Luigi if you want.
I'm not sure I want to be Luigi. And I don't want to be Princess Peach either.
You know, like Mario slapping Luigi, like Batman slapping Robin?
No.
You don't know this bitch slap, no? Don't you? It's an internet meme. Come on.
No, I don't want to get there. But to get back to Bitcoin, I understood from the channel that initially it was an inflationary currency. Now it's a deflationary currency, and there's apparently a lot of Bitcoin hoarding going on. And where's that? What's about the Bitcoin hoarding, Jaramil?
Sorry, I'm just laughing my ass off.
I'm asking a serious question here, for fuck's sake. Maybe. I don't think we have much music left on our playlist. Otherwise, I would just throw in some music.
I'm sorry. No. Don't worry. What are you asking?
I was asking, what's about the Bitcoin hoarding?
Yeah.
The Bitcoin hoarding.
Hoarding?
Yeah. The collecting of Bitcoins instead of spending them, like in a proper currency.
Oh, that's a very educated remark, Walter. Yes, indeed. I don't know about it. Okay, Harabi declare I have 140 Bitcoins and most of my addresses are public. I'm not playing like this kind of anonymous thing. I actually think anonymity has a limit in Bitcoin, but if you're really hard into it and if you really know about it, then you can be anonymous. But if you're not an expert hacker, then you should have a personal assistant. So I don't think Bitcoin is actually so anonymous in itself.
On the channel, someone says pseudonymous.
Pseudonymous, yeah. Mm. And, I mean, as far as I understand it, I mean, the knowledge and the ability of people to actually take care of their own shit is very limited. If you look around out of your bedroom with quad crunching Bitcoins, and then just, like, look around, you know, like you're 1 out of 100. And the people having that wallet in their own computer or mobile phone, they won't take care of it so easily. So it's not that anonymous. I mean, but what was the question?
This is going nowhere. I think we should wrap up.
No, man, the final joke just blessed me out, man. Like, the bitch slap.
Yeah.
I apologize to the few listeners we have left, and indeed he appears completely baked, but I haven't seen him smoke anything in the last 2 hours.
No, I didn't today at all.
But nonetheless,
I'm just nature like this. Yeah.
Okay.
Come on. Like, life is boring. You need more.
I don't think your life is boring at all.
Yeah, for a lot of people, like, people is boring. Come on. Yeah. Being baked is good.
Oh, I'm not saying that being baked is wrong. It makes it difficult to have an intelligent conversation.
Don't be square.
I am a square. I'm a born square.
Holy shit.
And I think we'll just throw in the last song, which is from the album Urban Dreams by Chill Carrier, and it's called Summer Road Trip, and it's kind of chilly, and you could have a spliff of it if you really want to.
Spliff?
You
mean spliff?
Mm-hmm.
Right now? Oh, with this music? Oh, this sounds, and it's not even illegal, we are in the Netherlands. Oh man, that's so nice. We can have a spliff now. You roll it? Would you roll it? Do you have transparent paper? That's my favorite, you know, like celluloid. It's very nice. It doesn't taste like paper. It's nice.
For assistance.